This is Husker Online, your authority on Nebraska athletics. In this weekly show, the Husker Online team will give you the latest insight on Husker football, basketball, baseball, and of course, recruiting. Now, here's your host, Husker Online publisher, Sean Callahan.
Hello here and welcome again to another edition of the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Steve Sipple, Robin Washett will join us momentarily. Abby Barmore also will be on the show here as always. But Sip, it's a big day. It's a plan your wedding reception, family reunion, Saturday function day around the state. I know a lot of people in Nebraska always kind of want to know when the game times are going to be. Well, we learned that today, really all across college football for Nebraska. The first three weekends, and for Nebraska, it's a Thursday night, August 31st, then September 9th and September 16th. Homecoming, to an extent, we learned, and then the two Friday games. So we know five of the kickoff times today for sure. Homecoming is still in flux, other than we know it won't be a night game. But I think the big news, when you look at this schedule for Nebraska, they will open their first two games of the season on Fox, nationally televised, Thursday night, August 31st, at Minnesota, 7 p.m. Central Time. And then the Huskers will play September 9th. They will be in Boulder, Colorado for Deion Sanders' first home game as a head coach. And that is a big noon kickoff, which is 11 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Mountain Time. And Sip, that's not the first time Nebraska's played out there at 10 a.m. before on Black Friday. I remember because I remember flying home after those games because the game started so early. Right. We would take like an 8 or 9 o'clock flight back.
Yeah.
But not great for the opening of the prime era for all the people in Colorado to be at that stadium for a 10 a.m. kick. But hey, I think it's a break for Nebraska.
Yeah, because a night game would be so wild. Is that what you're suggesting?
That, and I mean, it's just really hard to get primed up for a game at 10 a.m.
Well, I think you're talking about the fans, and you're right, but also the players. And this a 10 a.m. game, I will tell you unequivocally, is generally not it is not a great situation for players. It's not popular with players. You don't play it. Football's really not meant to be played at 10 a.m. It's not. So
it's 11 a.m. for Nebraska's
body. I'm not suggesting that they will complain, but I'm suggesting that they would definitely rather play later in the day.
If you're Nebraska, though, don't you almost like not even change the clock and just pretend like the game's at 11?
I suppose.
And just you could just operate all your clocks on Central Time.
Yeah.
Don't even change the clock. I mean, what's the point?
Right. No, I think you're right. I think this is kind of a good thing for Nebraska, not a good thing for Colorado. It'll still be wild. The fans will still show up. But it's not any night game is more daunting than a 10 a.m. kickoff.
And you know who Nebraska can thank Alabama, Texas.
Okay.
Texas will be at Alabama.
Okay.
That is the ABC night game on September 9th.
Okay. So that's the way it should be, by the way.
That game has kind of just parked itself in the night window. And, you know, NBC, because there are five Big Ten opponents that week that play Power Five opponents, five P5 on P5 non-conference or conference games. All five, though, are on the road at the other conference's stadium. So the Big Ten television package doesn't own any of these games. So on that September 9th, Maryland will host Charlotte.
Yeah.
That's on NBC.
Oh, boy.
Because that's how slim the pickings are of Big Ten stadium games. But you know, for Fox, they catch a break. They get a Big Ten team in a Pac-12 stadium. They own the rights to the Pac-12, so Nebraska will be there. Then now we know September 16th, great opportunity for recruiting. They could bring guys in that weekend, 6 p.m. Central, Northern Illinois, Matt Rule's home opener. Then they've got the game at Illinois on Friday, October 6th. That is a 7 p.m. Central time on Fox Sports 1. I think we kind of knew that would be the case for that game just because of the fact that it was Friday. Now, homecoming, all we know is that won't be a night game. We won't know the network until a later date. It's either going to be an 11 or a 2:30 or a 3. Just depends on the network picks that week. But they've designated it will not be a night game. I always wonder, why does Nebraska not want a homecoming game at night? Any idea?
No. I don't know.
Well, there's a lot of university, like they let you pick your homecoming date, and there's a lot of university functions and events that go on with homecoming.
Night. That's probably what it is.
You and I aren't, we're proud. I've been invited in these events. Have you?
No, I've never been invited, and I've never, but I would never accept an invitation. so I'm not, I'm glad it's probably okay.
There's a, I mean, they do a nice parade and other things
I'm
like
sure
that.
I'm sure it's lovely. Now the one thing, go back to Colorado. You don't have any quibble. You don't want any qualms with. You wouldn't take issue with Texas, Alabama being the night game over Nebraska, Colorado.
No,
what it should be.
I mean, I think.
Boy, Texas, Alabama. I'm frankly glad this game is early so I can watch Texas, Alabama.
We will be back off the post-game show at the hotel watching that game.
I will. I will be watching it 100%. Oh, there you go, Sean. I just said it. 100%.
Every time Sipple says 100%, please drink if you're following us at home right now because that's his new deal. We've moved on from Ramir to 100%.
Sometimes I just say 100.
100. Okay. That counts too.
Yeah.
But, you know, Black Friday, Nebraska hosting Iowa, 11 a.m.
Yep.
And we learned that was going to be the case because NBC is going to host the Michigan State-Penn State game in Detroit at Ford Field that night.
Night.
And here's the thing. The NFL is now going to play an Amazon game at 2.
Yeah.
So
there you go.
This normally would have been like a 2:30 or 3 o'clock game, but because the NFL.
Yeah, the NFL.
Selfish. Just give college. Keep.
Right.
I mean, we give you. The NFL gets Thanksgiving.
Right.
I mean, they get Thanksgiving.
Right. Why did they got a horn in on Black Friday? I'm usually pretty relaxed about kickoff times and what's going on in the NFL and college in that regard, but come on. I don't like the NFL horning in with Amazon on a Friday.
What I liked about Iowa Nebraska when it was played at like 2 or 3 o'clock, it had been played at that time the last 2 years. It had allowed if you're coming from anywhere in Nebraska or Iowa, you could leave in the morning and get there on Friday.
Yep.
Now this would be a little harder for fans to travel in and maybe force some more people to stay overnight for Thanksgiving, or you got to get up at like 5 a.m. and drive in, which I think more people will do that than stay in a hotel. But 11 a.m., it is what it is.
It's fine.
Makes me wonder, though, because NBC has their night game schedule out right now, and the November 18th date is Nebraska at Wisconsin. There's no NBC game on that day yet. It's a flex day.
Okay.
So there is a chance that Nebraska, Wisconsin on the road, that could be an NBC night game.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly. I don't know.
Just don't know what else is out there.
But my question is, does Nebraska or Iowa and other teams have a say because you play on a short week?
Oh.
I mean, you think about it, you could play at Madison on November 18th.
Okay.
At night. Okay. Game gets over at like 11.
Okay.
You'd get back at like 2 in the morning.
Uh-huh. And then you got to play Friday.
And then you got to play Friday morning. Not Friday night.
Right.
Friday morning.
Ooh, good point.
So you almost lose like a day and a half of body recovery.
I wonder how Matt Rhule would feel about that.
Will Nebraska have a voice in saying like, hey, we're all about playing on NBC, but not on a short week when we're playing on the road the week before?
Absolutely. You wonder about that.
But maybe this NBC thing, you know, you heard what Trev said. They want to play on those games.
Yeah, yeah. But, again, that's a very I just wonder what goes through a coach's mind. And if they're, you know, and if our coaches aligned on that type of issue, would you get several different opinions from 10 different coaches? I don't know. I don't know what you'd get there. I know this, though. If it were me, it would give me pause. If I were the head coach of Nebraska and they were suggesting that Nebraska plays a game late at night on November 18th and then we have a Friday game the next week, I'm not big on that. That's a tough – now think about it.
That's a tough turn.
The wear and tear at that point in the season is significant. I mean, you've gone through a long gauntlet.
Late cold night in Madison, Wisconsin.
Right.
To early
physical game
to early Friday morning in Lincoln. I mean,
I think it'll still be physical against Wisconsin. I guess we don't know
the air raid.
Yeah, Phil Longo's offense. I don't know what that'll look like. It used to be, you would say for sure that's gonna be a physical.
Here you go again. You're trying to make the fall camp bulletin board videos.
Oh, yeah,
I'm already on the Colorado one. I think so.
Are you?
No, I remember when I called out their players and just that the transition of getting a roster ready and all that.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so I'll be careful. I assume Wisconsin will still be a physical game.
And then finally, I want to hit on this briefly, Sip. The SEC.
Oh, boy, hot button topic.
I mean, they are still going to war about playing 8 versus 9 conference games. And I think now the big sticking point is if they go to 9, will they get more money from ESPN? What does that money look like? And I think there's a sentiment internally that why would we go to 9 if we're not going to get more money for it? And there's a huge, you know, they're really protective of their records because you add that extra game, you're going to get a lot more 5-7, 6-6, 7-5. Without that extra game, everybody gets a win. Everyone gets a 14-0 week in that league, and you're boosted up. You were a 7-5 team is 8-4. And that's a big deal. An 8-4 team becomes 9-3 when you take away that extra league game.
Oh, are you talking about extra league game?
Yeah, and replacing it with an FCS weaker game.
Okay. You've been really critical of the SEC for this. I'm going back to Scott Frost, who raised that issue all the time. Frost used to raise it too. There's no way I can push back on it. I mean, the only way I could push back on it is to say this. What's the best conference in the country? Who wins all the national titles?
Alabama and Georgia. Yeah. But so should the other teams all get a boost their win-loss record one extra game win-wise because they don't want to have to play another tougher game?
Life isn't fair is all I can say.
But these other teams are living off the coattails of Alabama and Georgia. And then they don't have to play an additional tough game. And that boosts them all up one win, which looks better for television ratings, which looks better for rankings and polls, recruiting rankings. When you can say you're 9-3 versus 8-4, or 7-5 or 6-6, I mean, think if Nebraska had in this year since they've gone to 9, there's been a lot of years where you would have liked to have played 4 non-conference games with one of those games being an automatic win. Mm-hmm. Instead, you have exchanged that game for an extra Ohio State or Michigan game. Big difference. Huge difference.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, there's nothing I can say except life's not fair, Sean, and the SEC is king. I
mean, well, but Saban and Smart want to play the 9th game. Saban wants to play all Power 5 games. The fans don't show up to those games.
No, they don't.
They don't. It's bad.
Those games, when you say those games, remember, Sean, not everybody knows what you're talking
about. The FCS week in the middle of the November schedule.
Right.
The protection week where they kind of protect their they get healthier, they get a win.
Sure.
But I think they will go to 9. Whether it's 2024 or 2025, I think a lot of it's going to be the television piece. But I believe ESPN will want that increased inventory.
Significant inventory. Yeah.
All right. When we come back, we're going to shift the conversation. We finished through some ranking the Big Ten quarterback, running back, wide receiver slots here. Want to get some thoughts just on that. And does Nebraska have any guys in there? If not, who are some of the top players returning in this conference at those key positions? We'll discuss that and more. You're listening here to the Husker Online Show. Hi, it's Sean Callahan with Husker Online. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for 5. That's right. A company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones and see what we find. Learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
You're listening to the Husker Online Show, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
And we're back here on the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Steve Sippel. Let's welcome into the program Robin Washed. He's still getting his holiday Memorial Day week schedule kind of lined up here. Oh, and I'm thrown off too. Robin, I didn't have you up there. You're on.
This is just amateur hour all the way across the board here.
Get the ship righted, Sean.
maybe double take there. So my wife's a teacher, and normally she'd be at work. She's not. And so, like, everything, my whole routine is just off. So I apologize.
Oh, in advance.
Not
you missed
not,
some
not
riveting,
to you guys, but to our listeners.
You missed some riveting schedule talk.
Well, yeah, big day.
There's a few things that get Sean more revved up than scheduled.
A lot of weddings have been planned. Yeah, a lot of family reunion times have been set. A lot of guys' trips have been figured out. We know the schedule.
Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah, and the Colorado one's the big one.
Big noon. We've been calling that for about a month, though. So it's not a surprise, but it's going to be, I mean, not rough for us, but rough for the fans of Colorado, which I'm not too upset about that.
10 a.m. local time. So I will say that seems like it would be a deterrent, but when I worked at the Montrose Daily Press in Montrose, Colorado.
Wait a second.
Way on the western slope. An hour
when was
south,
this?
Well, right out of college, 2007-08.
Okay.
I was able to talk my way into covering the Colorado State football game at then known as Mile High. And that was a 10 a.m. kick because it was nationally televised. Really similar deal. And I remember getting there early, like normally I do, you know, 3 hours early, whatever. So it's like 8 o'clock. So I was there. I was only there a couple hours early. 8 o'clock in the morning. And I'm walking through the parking lot and people were just blacked out, like shooting shots, doing beer pong, just ripping beer bongs. Like, so you would think that might tone things down a little bit. It'll only just, you know, make them have to start earlier.
But yeah, there you go. It'll still be wild.
Be forewarned.
It won't be like a night game. The night game.
No.
The only thing I'd say is the night game, the Colorado-Nebraska night game this year with Prime and Nebraska with a new coach, it almost maybe would have gotten too unwieldy.
Yeah, it would have been like Mad Max in the Thunderdome.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Flamethrowers and, yeah.
I mean, I'm expecting like Deion Sanders to come out on a horse. Like just coming
he's
out.
He's going to ride Ralphie onto the field.
Yes. He's coming out. I mean, it's not that far. I mean, I expect his first entrance.
Abby's aghast.
To be like, what's Apollo Creed in Rocky? You know, the way he comes. I mean, just some sort of like big entrance.
He'll drop from the sky on a stage of some sort.
Come into some sort of
chaps on, leather chaps. And yeah.
Yeah. I
Black Stetson hat.
I sound like an old man with that take about the night game being too unwieldy, but I don't know.
Hey,
I think it'd be really weird.
The big winner of all this is the Husker Online postgame show.
Yes. Yes. That is as manageable as it gets right there.
We will not be like in a Purdue library
with an unaware
overseas student live FaceTiming his girlfriend in a different country coughing in the background.
Look, those types of things make the show is what they are, I think.
Okay, well, let's get her back on track. Ranking the Big Ten, and we've been doing this series on Husker Online for years. It's a lot of fun. It kind of mimics what preseason magazines do, but we like to talk about who are the best players coming back in this league. Started out with quarterback. Rob, not a real surprise. J.J. McCarthy, 1. Tagovailoa, 2 at Maryland. Cade McNamara, 3. So really two of the top three quarterbacks for Michigan Wolverines a year ago.
Yeah, and, you know, that kind of got some comments going on the board about people saying he was rated too high. And
what were they saying?
Just that they don't think he's as good as people are saying.
McNamara?
And I think a lot of that is probably just annoyance out of Iowa fans hyping him up like, you know, he's going to be the next Brad Banks or whoever.
I mean, he went to the college football playoff.
Who was the quarterback they had?
Brad Banks was good.
Yeah, Brad Banks. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, the reality is that, you know, he's what, 13-3 as a starter?
Okay.
He won a Big Ten title 2 years ago.
Okay.
You know, in that championship year, threw for 2,500 yards, 15 touchdowns, 64% completion percentage. I mean, pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, I think that's kind of the reason why people in Iowa are so optimistic is because they feel like they finally got a quarterback again. And they went and got, you know, some other additions through the portal. They got Eric Aull, the tight end from Michigan. They got the kid from Ohio State, the transfer. I can't remember his name. I always forget it. Either way, they think that they finally have some firepower at the skill positions, which should make that 25 points per game maybe a little more attainable.
What did McNamara look to you in Lincoln? I thought he was nails.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, he's been there and done it at the highest level in this conference. And so that's why he got the nod over other guys that might put up better numbers. But the guy just wins everywhere he goes.
Who would you put above him?
We put above him was...
You can't put Aller above him.
Oh, you're talking about other guys on the list. So Tanner Mordecai was 4
at
Wisconsin. And so he's the SMU transfer, threw for a ton of yards at SMU, and now he's going to this air raid offense that Wisconsin's going to try to run. I think just by volume, he's going to put up serious numbers. Now, how efficient will they be? We'll see. I'm very curious what that picture of an air raid offense in Wisconsin looks like.
By season's end, too, Jeff Sims could easily be
in this list.
But
no doubt.
I think we've all taken a pump the brakes mentality. We're not just going to put Jeff Sims right up there, but I think he could be up there. I think he could easily find himself three or four-ish on that list.
And then here's one that could, by when all said and done, be number one. Drew out. Is it Allar? Allar?
A-L-L-A-R.
Yeah, whatever. Former five-star, like, number one quarterback recruit in the country at Penn State. He saw 10 appearances as a true freshman, only threw 60 passes. But they're talking about him like he's the next Andrew Luck, just with his size. He's 6'6", 242. He was the number three quarterback prospect in the country a couple years ago. And now he's going to get his shot. Sean Clifford's finally gone after about an eight-year career. And so the keys are in his hands. And he is a big reason why Penn State is being mentioned along with Ohio State and Michigan in that Big Ten conversation, because if he lives up to that potential, he's as good of as high of a ceiling as any quarterback in the conference and maybe in the country.
He's an exciting player. I caught him against Purdue last year, and he entered the game because Clifford was hurt, and it was impromptu, and he was fine. He looked good. He's a smooth operator.
He's a load.
Yeah. All right, let's move it on.
With a big arm, by the way.
Let's move it on to running back, because this might be the deepest, most talented position in the league. On three did a ranking, and five of the top 10 running backs in college football are in the Big Ten. Blake Corm is the number one running back going into the season. He's probably a projected Heisman finalist right now for the Wolverines, especially if they win the Big Ten again. Braylon Allen, who easily could be a 1,500 to 2,000-yard back from Wisconsin, number two. I think Braylon Allen, the big thing is health. Can he make it through a whole year? Yeah. Donovan Edwards, the number two running back at Michigan, but really a co-one. He's your third back in the league.
Man.
Nick Singleton at Penn State comes in at four. And then this was a tough one, Robin. You have Travion Henderson from Ohio State at five, but Mayon Williams also from Ohio State. I mean, they're kind of just like Michigan, you know, 1A, 1B type of thing, where those are two of the top 10 backs arguably in college football.
Yeah, we could easily co-byline that one at number five, because they haven't announced who the starter is going to be. Now, talking with people that cover Ohio State, know a lot more than I do, they think Henderson has the best chance to be the guy, and when healthy, has the highest ceiling. So that's why we gave him the nod. You go back to what he was as a freshman. A couple of years ago.
Right.
You know, what did he do? He ran for 1,200 yards, 15 touchdowns. I mean,
Travion Henderson.
Yeah, as a freshman All-American.
Then he backed off last year because of injury.
He got hurt. Yeah, he missed five games last year, and then Williams took over and ran for 825 yards and 14 touchdowns.
Way different running back.
Yeah.
A very physical runner. Not that Henderson's not. Williams just is a load.
Yeah, and so they have another guy, Chip Trianum, who is apparently also going to be in the equation of that running back rotation as well. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a true committee deal, but those guys are both so talented. But Henderson has shown that when he's healthy and when he's playing up to his potential, he's an All-American level talent. So that's why he got the slight nod over Williams. Okay.
And then finally, wide receiver. And once again, no Huskers on this list, right, Robin? You could have made a case, I think, for Billy Kemp.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was hurt a lot of last year, so it's hard to, you know, when you go back of just last year's work. But Marvin Harrison, number one, he's the number one receiver in the country, according to On3, the number two receiver in the country, also from Ohio State. Help me with the last name here, Emeka
Egbuka.
Egbuka is number
Egbuka.
Egbuka is number two. 100% simple.
100.
Isaiah Williams, number three, Illinois. Shamir Dyke, Wisconsin, number four. And then Chris Altman Bell, the law firm, is back at Minnesota for a seventh year.
Yes, seventh season. It's pretty incredible.
Thank you, COVID.
Yeah, so I mean he's played so long that he's appeared in 47 games over six seasons, and he's caught at least one pass in 41 straight games. So I think his is just kind of like the Career Achievement Award type deal. It's where like he's been in the league since 2010, so like, you know, he just by volume, he's up there. is it DK with Wisconsin? Chimere DK Dyke? Mm-hmm. I don't know his name.
They're doing fine.
Either way, just I put him at four on the list. He is kind of the same way with Mordecai, the Wisconsin quarterback, in the sense that he's Wisconsin's number one receiver last year. He's returning to be their number one. Caught 47 balls for 689 yards, six touchdowns. Modest numbers, but they led Wisconsin in everything last year. So he's going to be the number one this year in that pass-heavy air raid offense. So kind of another deal where I think by volume, he's going to catch a lot of passes for a lot of yards and a lot of touchdowns.
The thing to watch at Wisconsin is, and I know it's an air raid. Longo, though, ran the ball at North Carolina. He had two great running backs at one point, and they ran the hell out of it.
Well, it's not like they're just going to not give Braylon Allen the ball.
They
like,
got running backs, so we're going to run it.
That's the
you
thing.
You can run effectively out of a spread.
Well, that's the case to be made, like for Allen, is that, you know, before everybody knew he was getting the ball. They were going to line up in two or three tight end sets and just run the ball between the tackles, and there was no creativity whatsoever. Well, now they're going to spread everything out. Now you get that big Clydesdale, Braylon Allen the ball in space, and he's not going to have an eight-man box that he's going to have to run against. So that's the argument for why he could almost benefit more from this scheme shift to the air raid, and that for one, he has more help from a passing game. Two, it's going to create more space for him to run to where it's not, you know, basically having to barrel through three or four tacklers before he gets to the open field.
Yeah, I just want to keep emphasizing that we keep calling air raid.
Well, that's what
but that's not, it's not necessarily going to be Mike Leach, RIP, by the way, Texas Tech offense. That's not necessarily what we're looking at here. It'll be determined by personnel. And when you have a running back like that, you're still going to get him 20 carries a game, I would think, right? 20, 21 carries. They still got the great backup, Chez Maluzzi.
Yeah.
They're going to run it. I'm not on this whole thing where they're not going to be physical. They're going to be an air raid. They're going to spread you out, and it's going to look – it'll look different. But they're still going to come at you.
Well, they're going to run a lot of plays, and so there's going to be a lot of snaps to go around. And so, therefore, when you have a number one back like that, he's going to get his carries. And the argument, he's going to still get 20-plus carries a game, but it's going to be in a much more spread out.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk recruiting now. Nebraska is going to host a big visit weekend. We have camps starting on Sunday. And more visitors have been set. We're going to discuss all that next here as a busy month of June awaits. You're listening here to the Husker Online Show.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
51 Seriously declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to the Husker Online Show, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
And we're back here on the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Steve Sipple, Robin Washed. A busy month of June is upon us here as Nebraska's got nearly 30 official visitors now set that will make their way into Lincoln on top of all the camps that will take place, not only in Lincoln, but a couple of satellite camps next week. In Texas, where Matt Rhule and the entire staff will be down in the Waco Belton area, and also Houston Christian College. So there's a lot going on in that sense. But I want to get first, because On3 is holding the NIL Summit right now in Nashville. And it's an awesome event with, I believe, over 50 of the top 4- and 5-star players in the country for NIL education. People like Libby Dunn and Kirk Herbstreit are there to speak as, to all the athletes, but they did interviews with all these guys. And one of the things that dropped in an interview was Brandon Baker, who's been in Nebraska twice, nation's top ranked tackle, is no longer considering Nebraska. He's no longer going to visit Nebraska. And, you know, I can tell you as of a week ago, the plan was that he was going to come for the Michigan game. and they have a bye week that week. He wanted to come to a home game, but now Nebraska not in the picture with Brandon Baker. Mm. And, you know, I think it's really a reality of recruiting. I mean, you've got to get your activity done in June. I think if you're trying to go past June, the big dog programs, Ohio State's, the Georgia's, Miami's, they're going to squeeze these guys,
okay,
whether it's spots in a class or NIL, to get a decision when they want the decision.
Yeah.
And Brandon Baker, his timeline went from the Army All or the All-American Bowl in San Antonio to now he might have a decision made in the summer.
Right. So that's what you mean by squeezing. These programs want a decision made before the season.
They don't want it to go into the season.
Right.
Because they need to plan their numbers and their NIL and other things. And so Brandon Baker no longer considering Nebraska. And, yeah, I think Nebraska was in the conversation. I never thought they were going to get Baker. I thought they were doing a really good job to even get in front of Baker. But if they could have got him back again, that was going to be big.
Yeah. Why did you think? Here's why. Because he sat right in this room.
Twice.
And was very genuine in what his thoughts about Nebraska were. He was very genuine in his questions about Nebraska to you. He couldn't have been feigning interest. I mean, unless he's just a marvelous actor. It was genuine. Did I think he was going to come here? I don't know. I gave it a shot. I mean, I'm sort of an internal optimist when it comes to that stuff. And I think if as a recruiter, I'm not a recruiter, but if you're a recruiter, you have to be. And I mean, he was on your campus twice.
June 9th and June 23rd, though. He'll visit Ohio State June 9th, Georgia June 23rd.
Why would you think you wouldn't have a shot at him? I mean, he took the trouble to come here twice.
Right.
Asked questions, was clearly enamored with the place. All you got to do is go back and look at the interviews. So you had your foot in the door with him. You got to keep doing it and not get discouraged if you're Nebraska.
Oregon, Texas, and Florida State are the others, along with Ohio State and Georgia.
Say that again, please.
Ohio State, Georgia. He has visits set June 9th, June 23rd. Yeah. Oregon, his brother played at Oregon.
Sure.
Texas and Florida State. Those are the five that he's going to visit. And then you've got Tennessee and Miami, who have kind of emerged, I think, in the NIL world as two of the bigger players, okay, with their collectives,
yep,
and how they've operated.
Yep.
You know, like if you were to rank collective power, I think Tennessee and Miami have to be right up there.
I talked to someone very close to Tennessee, and they said Tennessee doesn't recruit anymore. They select. I mean, they're selecting players. Now, I think that's a bit of an exaggeration, but that's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really recruit as a Tennessee assistant coach anymore. It's not the recruiting that we became accustomed to over a period of years. It's just we're offering this much money. What do you think?
And you tell a guy when they can commit.
There's
if you want to commit, it's here right now. If not,
right,
it's gone.
Right. There's a lot of money there.
Yeah, and you see all the talk. You know, we're talking about the NIL summit, just about how the SEC is playing a completely different game than everybody else with the money that they're offering right now. And just the level of organization of their collectives and the support those collectives have to where what they're able to put on the table for a recruit like that is so much higher than most other schools, even a program like Nebraska, that it's just hard to be able to stay in the race against that when you're competing against that.
Well, winning too. I mean, I think, yeah, I don't think it's the Peds aren't going to get outbid if they want
the Peds that run
the 1890 collective. If they want to get a guy here, they can. But Nebraska's got to be in a position to get the guy.
100.
I mean, like in the world, I mean, you're not going to outbeat Georgia and Ohio if you can match the money. It's Georgia or Ohio State. They're going to pick probably Ohio State or Georgia, right? So Nebraska's got to get in a position as a program to not only justify the payout to a recruit with their collective, but the kid's got to say, yeah, this makes sense for me to go here.
But if you're a collective, like it's kind of the chicken and the egg argument. Like, mm-hmm, do you need to dump a bunch of money to get those types of players to play at a championship level, or you need to win in order to get those types of players interested in you to where then you're playing on the same playing field as
those other
teams?
It's not a healthy model.
It's really not.
Like, look at A&M.
Well, wait a second.
A&M went all in last year on this big class, mm-hmm, and it's kind of already blown up on him. I think you really throw off your locker room dynamics if you would go all in on a bunch of freshmen, and then they're making more money than the older players in your program.
Mm-hmm. Now, what Robin is asking, essentially, I think, if I'm reading this right, Robin, is you're suggesting, or you're asking, did you just buy a team?
Like, does Nebraska and their collective need to try to overcome their lack of on-field success by just going above and beyond with how much money they're offering?
I don't know that you could do that. Now, Sean will suggest the Petes can offer an inordinate amount of money, and they probably could, but it wouldn't be healthy for Nebraska. Right. It wouldn't be a good look for Nebraska. You have to keep this stuff within reason. And, no, I mean, I just don't think.
You can't go back. Once you go down that road.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
How do you say, okay, now we're going to pull back the money. Yep. Yeah, if we're giving this much money now, and then we're going to back it off.
After we start winning, we're going to back off. No, it won't work that way.
You know, once the, you know, you, and you can't throw off the market that much.
Like the market.
The NIL market.
I know.
Mean, like there's a market, and you can't, I mean, you can't, it's like buying homes. You can't just go out and overbuy a bunch of, overpay for a bunch of houses. Like
we
you have
kind
to,
of know the market. I mean, what's, I mean, a top team right now, Sean, needs how much money to keep their roster intact? Would you say $8 million?
That's
the number that's been thrown.
That's
around.
The top number for the top, like,
yeah, what Ryan Day say? Did he say 10?
He said 13.
There's 13. A more accurate number now. Like,
yeah, that number was old. That's an old number.
That
I think that number went down to about 8 or 9, but it's still crazy. Significant.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes, it is.
It
no,
is.
No, it. I think the number is more like 6 now.
Okay, now here's the deal. That money, there was money going out before. I mean, there was SEC was paying players long ago. Now it's up front. I don't want to be pretend like I don't want to be feign like I'm horrified by what's going on. It's just like everything else. The SEC's ahead of the game. They're ahead of the game. They always are ahead of the game.
Now, isn't the other issue to this like what's being said and offered during the recruiting process? The amount that actually translates
sure.
to. Getting money in players'
some
bank accounts.
Fictional, is that what
like
you're
a lot of like there's a the On3 summit. If you follow On3 NIL, they're doing all these live updates from this convention that they're doing. We're talking to players, and 5-star KJ Bolden had some really interesting things. He said if a school is telling you you're going to make millions or in the millions range, that's quarterback money. And he says that there's a fine line between knowing who's telling the truth and selling you a bill of goods and who's actually being legit with you. And so now that's a whole other element where you're not only having money being thrown around, you're getting like fake offers getting thrown around to where you can get a kid to commit and then
the money just doesn't pay
something
out.
Comes up and the money doesn't end
so
up.
Here are the numbers from Pete Nakos. Like the top funded collectives have a bankroll of about $8 million.
Yeah.
But it's more realistic for the there's very few in that $8 million range. On3's Pete Nakos reported Power Five collectives are generally operating in the $3 to $6 million range. I know a year ago, Nebraska had $5 million.
So when we say operating at the $3 to $6 million range, is that what it costs to pay your current roster, basically?
Their annual money that okay. they need to operate.
Okay.
Whether for transfers, for recruiting, and for your current roster. But I think in a perfect world, you have to have multiple funds. You have to have one for your current players, and then you have to have one for transfers, and then you got to have one for recruits.
And, a budget.
You have to have an operational fund almost.
Okay.
And, I mean, you've got to have, you know, the athletic department's got to be more publicly supporting the direct collective. And I don't know if that's happening right now. I mean, you don't hear that they say collectives, but there really is only one collective at Nebraska. And On3 had a really good article saying, like, if you say you have more than one collective, that's not good. You need to
Why?
Have one because it confuses donors. It confuses people. And by rule, the athletic directors can promote a collective by name and help funnel money there directly by talking about them. We're not really seeing that at Nebraska either right now. I mean, it's very vague language, mm-hmm. Very broad based language for whatever odd reason. So it will be interesting if that will change because there's a heck of a commitment financially being made by boosters and the Pede family mm-hmm. for this collective. You know, Nebraska should recognize that, I think, with direct language to support that.
Right. I agree. Now, the one thing we can do, and I think you have to be intentional in this regard. We need, as journalists, to talk in precise language and be precise about what we're talking about with NIL. I think we can be really. I think people can be very sort of irresponsible in the way they talk about this stuff. It's I think it requires a lot of precision because people don't understand it. We do at a pretty high level, I think. But you can't. Come on, a lot of people.
You'll never get the exact numbers players get paid. I mean, that is generally going to be kept at a high level of secrecy for the right for obvious reasons.
Well, I think for the right reasons, but still, that's a flaw in my opinion. It's a flaw.
But then it screws up your whole roster and locker room.
Well, it leads to a lot of speculation, and that's what Rob's getting at, what that player that Rob references is getting at. It leads to a lot of wild speculation about what players are making. Mm-hmm. I'd almost prefer that you know, like the NFL, like the NBA, Pro League. Instead of this sort of secrecy
right. That
exists.
You're operating as if you're a full-blown for-profit organization. Players are being paid. Just do it.
But the secrecy will still exist. Like, they could say this public number, but you know there's going to be other secret side pots.
Until they're just full-blown employees, right?
And that's what the SEC is proposing.
That's what inevitably is where it needs to go. I mean, there's because what we're doing right now is so unstable. You know, I mean, just with the amount of unknowns and speculation and rumors and lies that are being told right now, like, this is not sustainable. Like, you have to be able to have a concrete regulation to where everybody knows what you're making, what you're being paid,
and how it's happening.
And I think that's paying for it. Trev Alberts' big issue with a lot of NIL is just the uncomfortable part of all of this and the lack of transparency. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, I think in his shoes as an old school college, it's hard for him to get behind a lot of these things going now.
Who is behind it? Like, who do you know of anybody that says, I think this is going really well? Is there anybody telling you guys, you guys need to relax? It's going well. It's going fine.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would. I don't think it is going well or fine. I think there's too many. There's just the lack of regulation.
Agents think it's grown great.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If you're
One agent I've talked to, they make more money working with a college athlete than a pro athlete.
How could that be, Sean?
Well, because the percentages are higher. They can take a higher cut.
Great.
And a college athlete is straight 1099. They can structure them differently. They can organize them differently and create a lot of things to help them. Where in the NFL, you're a straight W-2 employee, meaning you're payroll taxed and you pay other taxes as an employee. Mm-hmm. Where NIL money, you're not an employee. You're essentially getting 1099 income. And then that allows you to structure and do a lot of things and create organizations and, you know, like you're running a small business almost.
And in that model, too, you would have the ability to basically put players under contract to where now you're getting the initial offers out of the recruiting process. And then a player does well. I'm going to go put myself in the transfer portal and see what other offers I can get. Like, it's basically annual free agency every year that a player is before going to college. And every year, every offseason after that.
Not healthy.
All right. I think we can do a whole show on this. We will pick this conversation back up, but we got to bring Abby in. Let's talk mailbag next. You're listening here to the Husker Online Show.
Wait, you need to add me in.
Will you add this me in? Is Husker Online, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
And we're back here on the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Steve Sippel, Robin Washett. Let's welcome in Abby Barmore to the program. I'm sorry, Abby, by the way, that you're not in Brazil. I know you were really, really wanting to be in Brazil with Nebraska. But before I get to the mailbag questions, when will Nebraska play those volleyball matches out in Brazil?
Yeah, they have four that are just coming up. I think they start tomorrow and they play one each day. And these teams that they're playing against, they are like very high quality teams. They're playing like Brazil's like under 21 team, I think, and then some that have been successful at a high level. So they're going to be playing a lot of good competition, and it'll be good for them to kind of create some chemistry as they have six new players on that team.
Now, Abby, I know with basketball, with these foreign tours, they try to schedule them intentionally to where you play a team that you know you're just going to whip. You're going to play a team that's going to be pretty evenly matched, and then they want to play a team that's going to whip you. Do you think that that's the formula John Cook lined up?
I would say so. I mean, it's good, especially in Nebraska. They're kind of used to winning a lot and being on the top level.
That's the whole
point
of it. They want to see how the team responds to getting their butts whipped.
Especially with so many new players, that will be good for them is to kind of understand where they stand, not just in, you know, Big Ten volleyball, but kind of volleyball in the world. And they're going to learn from all different kinds of people, and volleyball is huge in Brazil. So I think they'll see all kinds of different stuff.
Yeah. And from a time zone perspective, Brazil, I believe, is Eastern time zone. So, you know, like the matches will be, yeah, it's just straight down the line. I mean, go to Florida and keep going, you know.
I was thinking maybe it was just straight down the line. Straight down.
The only reason I remember that was when the Olympics was in Florida, or when the Olympics was in Brazil, excuse me. It didn't really affect the start times, you know, because it was they were
dead south.
Yeah. They were in the American time zone areas.
The western part of South America is central.
Okay.
I believe.
So,
all right.
We should be able to follow these, but let's get to the mailbag, Abby. What do you got?
Yeah. All right, our first one. Name one player that you believe will start against Minnesota that may surprise media and the fan base.
John Bullock. I'll just throw that one out there.
Oh, hello.
That's becoming less and less of a surprise with Matt Rhule talking about him being an NFL player. But still, that means he's beaten out an established veteran.
I don't know if there's too many others you could.
I'll go Borkercher.
Okay, that's a good one. That's a good one.
I'd go Borkercher at tight end.
Now, in a two tight end set, is that what you're projecting?
Yeah. Okay. I would not project him over Fedoni. I would project him over Gilbert. Yeah. Well, in fact, he started the spring game.
What about one of those ends, like the edge guys, like Lenhart or Princewell?
Gosh, that's a good – I mean, too early Ty Robinson's coming back. Remember that?
Yeah. I wouldn't – no, what I'm suggesting is I wouldn't be that surprised.
Yeah.
If he,
so that's not even guys. The surprising
Not
category.
To me. It wouldn't be to me. No, Borkercher would be the one I would say. Who else? Bullock's a good name, Sean. Bullock, what you wonder, I mean, some of it is what's the alignment, right? I mean, some of it's going to come down.
Minnesota will be a heavier team the way they come out.
Okay. So, yeah, those are the ones.
What do you got?
All right, next. Who in year one will have the most success? Coach Prime, Luke Fickell, or Matt Rhule, and why?
Oh, hell.
I mean, I think the safe money based on just – over-unders is Luke Fickell. I mean, he's got an 8.5-9 over-under. Mm-hmm. They're picked to win the West. They only play one difficult crossover game. I believe they have
Penn State.
Okay.
I think, Sean, I think it's Penn State.
Yeah, I know Iowa and Wisconsin only play one.
Iowa plays Penn State.
Yeah, Iowa plays Penn State, and they play Ohio State, I believe.
Oh, yes, that's right.
So
I was wrong.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, I want to make that very clear. Iowa plays Penn State.
And that's their only Eastern Power crossover game.
Please, Rob, please rescue us on this because me and Sean.
Yeah, the Eastern crossover is Ohio State for Wisconsin.
And Wisconsin's got a great schedule.
In Madison.
Like, their non-conference marquee game is Washington State, which is, they beat them, we know, a year ago. But
hey, they got to play Georgia Southern.
Hello, Clay Helton, baby.
Don't overlook them.
Speaking of air raid, I don't know if that's an air raid, but they raided Lincoln through the air.
They raided a head coaching job.
Yeah, they raided Chenander right out of town.
But I would bank Fickell as an 8-win guy. Rhule's going to be looked at as a 6-win guy. And Coach Prime's probably going to be looked at as a 3-win guy year one.
Yeah, I mean, Prime is clearly third on that list.
Are we really calling him Prime?
We are. We seem to be.
I remember there was a big deal when he was like, don't call me Dion, don't call me Sanders, call me Coach Prime. I'm not going to fall in line with that. I'm going to call him Dion.
Okay. I don't know.
Start the trend.
Coach Sanders. I'll compromise.
Yeah.
All right, what's next, Abby?
Which Husker football game are you most looking forward to this fall? And don't pick Minnesota or Colorado because I know Michigan. That is right on top of your head.
Michigan night game. I mean, and all that entails. I think it'll be a close. I think Nebraska
is it a night game though?
Well, it should be, right?
Well,
Sean,
it doesn't really matter like what we think because it matters like what the network picks are that week.
And I know, but don't you think? I mean, we don't know.
I mean, there's only one night. Like, so that's the 30th right now of September. NBC has not set a night game.
Okay,
but Fox is still considered the prime pick. Okay. But then there are weeks where NBC gets the first pick. Then there are weeks where CBS gets the first pick. So it's a rotating deal.
Okay. It might not be a night game.
It could be, though, because there's two flex openings right now that would match Nebraska's schedule for NBC night games. September 30th against Michigan and then November 18th at Wisconsin. Those theoretically could be on NBC at night.
Yeah, Michigan theoretically could be number one in the country, right?
Yeah.
And you're going to see Fox, whoever can get that game will take that game because you're going to get 5 million viewers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you are.
And that's why last year's game was nationally televised.
Yeah. And the, you know, but the, you know, the game where Adrian dropped the ball or had the ball stripped, that was a largely viewed game. It was incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Michigan writer that I talked to for our opponent looks said that was the best game he can ever remember attending on the road. Because the atmosphere was extraordinary.
Yeah, they did the Thunderstruck.
And the two teams went out.
Michigan went onto the field and was dancing to it. Like, that was...
It was an amazing scene.
It was a tie game at that point.
Yeah, it was an extraordinary night. It was an extraordinary game. It was one of the most... I've covered it for, 25 years. It's a game... I forget a lot of games. In fact, I forget being at some games. I'll never forget that game.
Remember when Frost, went out on the field and, fought with the ref, and then they got those calls overturned. It was huge at that moment, mm-hmm. because it flipped the game. Then Nebraska tied it, and I mean, there was
a lot going on.
They had a college football playoff team tied, I believe it was 33-33.
If they blow the whistle sooner,
forward progress on it. But Adrian shouldn't have been trying to fight on a 3rd-and-5 run where he had four guys trying to tackle him.
That was a horrifying moment.
I'm going to go with the Iowa game. I'll throw that one in there as well, just because I think there's going to be something on the line for that one. I think if Nebraska's a 6-win team, mm-hmm. that's probably going to have to be number 6 to go to a bowl.
Well,
and then is Iowa going to have to score a certain amount of points in order to save their offensive coordinator's job? If they're going to hit that 25-point per game mark, what if they need to score 27, mm-hmm. And they get to 20?
Sean, you think Iowa could be playing to win a division?
I do.
Yeah. So I'm saying, I think that game, for one, it's the Black Friday rivalry game, all that. But I think with just what could be at stake potentially for both teams, I think that'll make that a little extra saucy.
Guys, I mentioned Michigan-Nebraska kick. The Wolverines opened the season against East Carolina, and that game is only on the Peacock.
Oh, gee, many Christmas.
So can you imagine the gripes and complaints that every single Michigan Wolverine fan is going to get squeezed to buy a Peacock subscription to watch that game?
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine working at the paper and getting the calls? What channel is the Peacock?
Yeah, that would have been a lot of that. Oh, it'd been, you'd have to take the phone off the hook.
Is that on NBC?
The sports bars really win on that, though, because there's people either can't figure it out or don't want to do it, and they just go to Tanner's or somewhere and watch the game.
Don't want to subscribe to a network, just go to a sports bar.
All right, what do you got, Abby?
All right, next one. By the start of the season, how many commits do you think Nebraska will have?
12 to 15. I think they're at 7 now. They want to take around 20, and I think they would like to be around 12 to 15 going into the season with room to add 5 or 6 more as the year goes on.
I can't push back on that.
Nope.
Simple's job is to push back on me, usually. All right, final question, Abby Barmore.
100.
Okay, final question. I know it's been a while since you guys have got to go to a tailgate, but what is your go-to tailgate food?
Oh, simple for me. I just love hot dogs. I mean, I just have three hot dogs, not get too filled up.
Wings. Give me some wings. Plate of wings,
Italian sausage with, the pepper sauce on it. And a legit bun from Rotella's. Not just some crap store brand bun, a legit bun for an Italian sausage with sausage and peppers, preferably from Stoysage, my good friends in South Omaha.
Okay, that's good. I just go simplicity. Charcoal grill, hot dogs.
Now, I love ribs, but I don't want those at a tailgate. It's too messy. I don't want it covered in sauce.
I don't want to think about it too much either. I don't want to be the chef of the day.
If somebody else is making them, I'll have some.
I do think Blackstones have kind of made their way, or flat top grills. That's become more of a tailgate
clutch
thing.
Clutch tailgate operation.
And I'll probably
How
get
do you
him
guys know so much about this? You never tailgate.
Because I grill a ton. My dad runs a huge tailgate party. He has for years.
I know a lot of dudes that tailgate.
I tailgated growing up going to the College World Series.
Charcoal grill and hot dogs. That's what I want.
The burgers on a Blackstone or flat service grill.
I'm so close to just getting a Blackstone or a flat top grill, but
I can't
just haven't.
You don't have one.
It's more the space, and then I'd have to kind of retire one of my grills.
I was worried you were about to say, I'm so close to just saying, screw it, I'm going to tailgate every Saturday.
Yeah.
We're going to throw a corporate
columns.
We're going to throw a corporate Husker Online party, and I'm not going to work. My job is just to entertain the guests, watch the game.
And then shows up to the press box, just keeps his sunglasses on the whole time.
I'll get ready for the post-game show. That's my job. Hey, there are some guys in my shoes. That's what they do, though. I won't do that, though, I promise you guys. Yeah, I'll
Please let's not take a talk about that right now.
All right. When we come back, we'll end the show with some other news and notes, including Keisei Tomonaga and his future. You're listening here to the Husker Online Show.
This is Husker Online, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
Final segment here of the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Steve Sipple, Robin Washett. I do want to hit on that visitor list. I know I talked about getting into it in our NIL segment. Didn't get into that because we got so going on NIL, but I do want Robin Washett to give us the latest. We're approaching that deadline. Keisei Tomonaga, Robin, met with the Pacers. What can you share? What's your feel on that whole situation?
Okay, well, we're taping this Wednesday. It's about 2:25 p.m. Central Time. He has until, I believe, 10:59 p.m., so basically midnight Eastern Time, 11 o'clock Central,
okay,
to officially make his withdrawal or stay in the draft as an early entrant and maintain his college eligibility. So by the end of this taping, we should have a pretty good idea. And I do know, as I said, it's 2:25. From what I've been told, at 2:30, he's going to be meeting with Fred Hoiberg and the staff to basically come to a final decision. Now, there's still remains heavy confidence that Keisei will be back. I've been expecting him all along to return, but it's kind of one of those deals where until it's official, you never say never, just because you never know through this process if minds got changed or whatever. And so that you mentioned the Pacers workout, that was his one and only pre-draft workout with a team, and it happened on Tuesday. He did pretty well. They have a thing, there's a picture of it on the Pacers' Twitter, where if you shoot 25 three-pointers, and if you make 20 or more, you get to ring this bell that they have on the wall. Well, of course, Keisei hit, I think he got 21 or 22 from what I heard, so he got to ring it. So he did well. Larry Bird was sitting there watching him, so a really cool experience for him. But I don't know if it did much to change his NBA stock. I think that he heard everything that we all expected. He needs to get bigger, stronger. He needs to play better defense, and he needs to show that he can be that player he was in February and half of March over the course of a full season.
Is that what you think that's what he heard?
Yes, I do think that's what he heard. I'm pretty confident to say that that's what he heard.
Okay.
Now, what's interesting is the Pacers, they were the one team that brought him in on a workout. They have 5 draft picks this year, including a bunch in the end of the second round.
Okay.
So if any team mm-hmm. was going to take a flyer on a guy just to see mm-hmm. if, you know, that might happen, that would be a pretty good landing spot.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that kind of, if you want to like worry about it, that gives you a reason to think that maybe he might give it a shot. But I think when all is said and done, by the time people are listening to the show this weekend, Keisei will be a Husker for next season.
All right. Let's, as we wrap
good
up
job, Rob.
The show today, big official visit weekend. We have 9 official visitors coming into Lincoln this weekend for the opening weekend of June. It's very defensive back heavy
mm-hmm.
For Nebraska. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Actually, there's going to be 6. One of the ones is switching. We're getting it confirmed, but 6 of the 9 guys are going to be defensive backs. So that kind of tells you that this is a priority weekend. You have Peyton Morgan, Mario Buford, both 4-star defensive backs coming in. Dante Carter, also a high 3-star out of Texas, coming in as a DB. William Nettles, a 3-star corner out of Dallas. And then you've got, obviously, Caleb Pyfrom. He's coming in. Now, we have Kamari McClellan as an unofficial, the quarterback. We have not been able to confirm he's not coming, but wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't show now that Nebraska has Daniel Kalen. They don't have an offer for him. But Joseph Anderson out of St. Louis would be the other edge player coming in that weekend from St. Louis. So keep your eyes on that one, too, to get worked out. We did confirm that Eric Ingwersen out of Papillion La Vista, the Pitt commit, is coming on June 16th to Nebraska. Another new visit addition, Grant Bricks, has finally solidified his visit dates. He'll be at Nebraska June 23rd, and that's still going to be the biggest one. We have 16 confirmed official visitors on that list. It's a little misleading, though, because Davon Hall's on there. I don't know if he'll make it here or not. He's going to visit Tennessee to camp, but his interview this past weekend, just didn't have a good feel
for interview with you.
Yeah. With me at the camp on Saturday. Didn't have a good feel for Nebraska. Like, it's almost like he's finding a reason not to go to Nebraska. He's only been on campus one time since Matt Rhule's hiring.
Okay.
So that's one. I'll be curious where it ends. Isaiah McMorris, though, I do think Nebraska is in a good position there. OU was a player, but they've kind of backburnered him because they've got a receiver. They have another guy they want for the other spot. So that's what happens, guys. The month of June, you know, you really find out where you stand.
Okay. So the month of June, you really find out where you stand. We've had Jacob Smith in here, who's a edge rusher from Connecticut. Cheshire, Connecticut, right, John?
Yep, you got that right. Cheshire.
He's visiting June 16th. People are going to start looking at guys like that and saying, can Nebraska pull a guy like that? Can Nebraska pull a guy
I think the question with, like, Jacob Smith on June 16th is, will he even get to Lincoln?
Oh, boy.
Because he's going to visit Michigan June 2nd. Guess who's going to Michigan? His brother. He's committed there. His twin brother.
Okay.
Then he's going to go to Kentucky June 9th. That's where he used to live before Cheshire Academy.
Okay.
Then Nebraska.
Yeah.
So I think the bigger question is, can they get him back to Lincoln for a third visit? I don't know if Michigan lets him escape without committing.
Okay.
That's
what you said before, right? They're squeezing him, right?
I think Michigan's going to say, oh, man, we want you, but if
– because
every time you let the weekends roll, they bring in other guys at your position.
Sure.
And do you want to take that chance?
Sure.
And that's what they tell these guys. And that the approach of Matt Rhule's recruiting is different than a lot of schools, because they're going to bring in all their top guys on the last weekend of June.
Hmm.
And so – you know, like for Grant Bricks, he's got four trips lined up.
Grant Bricks is the offensive lineman from Logan, Iowa.
And
four-star.
That's his fourth visit.
Top-rated player in Iowa.
He's going to go to Oklahoma, Kansas State, Alabama, then Nebraska.
Would you suggest to Nebraska to try to get him earlier?
I think this is going to be a really good case study or test study for them, how they approach June. The other thing I would say is it's really hard to get the guys you want maybe on June 3rd, because the same guys you want, everybody else wants.
Right. Jesus. It is a bear out there to get these guys.
Like Isaiah McMorris doesn't have any other June visits set up. So like, he's an in-state guy. Like, the fact that Nebraska's is only one, that's a good sign. Davon Hall doesn't have any other official set up. When you're a receiver, there's 84 star receivers a year. So You might carry that ranking, but you're kind of a dime a dozen, because there's a lot of you out there. Mm-hmm. And you might only have two receiver spots, three receiver spots per top 25 team.
You know what, Sean? I mean, when I think about all this stuff, I'm always thinking about players, plural, that can get you over the top. That's why a guy like Carter Nelson becomes so important, because he's in your own state. That should be one you get.
But it
puts more pressure on you to get him.
And Carter Nelson expected to be at Georgia this weekend.
Wonderful.
But
Georgia, they have two tight ends.
Well, they just
already
took Jaden Riddell, the top tight end arguably in the country, out of Ray Moore Peculiar in Kansas City.
Two tight ends in the class.
I mean, Nebraska, though, technically has two. Keelan Smith is going to be an athlete that probably grows into something else. And that's why Ingerson's interesting too, because everybody thinks he's probably a tackle at 6'5", 6'7", 245, but he's a tight end right now.
Hmm.
So this Carter Nelson tightrope for Nebraska is interesting
because
you know, a lot of the guys they're on kind of have the same body builds, and what do you do? But yeah, it's going to be tense. These next 3 weeks, we really, really tense.
Oh boy.
You know, for everybody in college football to get kind of 75-80% of your class in place.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
And to get some difference makers, you know. And that's what everybody's going to assess. When it all shakes out, when June's over, what I'm going to do is assess, did they get a difference maker or two? Because that's what you got to get. And you got to be real about it.
All right. So plenty to follow. We'll have Tunnel Talk Friday. You want to get on Husker Online, great special, $29.95, get you access to Husker Online for the next 6 months. We will also have Husker Online headlines later in the week. So make sure you like, follow, subscribe to us here on the Husker on the YouTube page. Also, find us anywhere you find podcasts. We post the show as a podcast as well. Big official visit weekend. Make sure you're on Husker Online. We'll keep you up to date with the latest.
Thanks again for joining us this week on Husker Online, your authority on Nebraska athletics.